And good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon the place you are on planet Earth, this spinning globe orbiting around the sun at about 18 and a half miles per hour, hurtling around the galaxy at a lot higher velocity, and God knows where the Milky Way is going. I know we're heading toward Andromeda. That's the bad news. The good news is we're not going to get there for about 5 billion years, in which case we will have a new presidential campaign. Just kidding, folks. Tonight we're doing something really remarkable. We're going to be delving into ancient Russian and ancient terrestrial history with a guest who I've discovered in the last couple of weeks is somewhat controversial. I've actually had serious mail wanting me not to have tonight's guest on. And every time I get that kind of mail, which I must say is kind of rare, I get really, really interested, because if you want to see a hit job on guests, on people, you just go and look at my WikiLeaks posts, which, of course, I have nothing to do with. You know, many years ago, we actually ran an analysis. Actually, we didn't. It was someone in Canada who did it just independently and then let us know. And it turns out that most of the bizarre and outright lies about me on WikiLeaks come from NASA postings. How do we know that? By the ISPs. I mean, it's really hard, unless you're really, really trying, to obscure your electronic trail these days. And it was very interesting that all this real misinformation, the appropriate term these days was fake news, about me is coming on the web from NASA, from NASA ISPs at various NASA centers. And I say to myself, well, I mean, if I'm really the wacko and the nut job and all that that they're claiming, why do they bother? So I kind of had the same reaction to the hit pieces that were sent to me about my guest tonight. So we'll explore this as we go through the evening and the morning. First of all, I want to actually call your attention to some very intriguing news items, because just when you think things can't get weirder, remember, I talk about this time as that magical time between dusk and dawn, where we used to talk about all the things you couldn't talk about in daytime. Not true anymore. I mean, the stuff going on in daytime makes the stuff that used to be only discussable at this time of night pale by comparison. Let me give an example. Go to theothersideofmidnight.com. That's our homepage. Click on tonight's banner, which is appropriately named The Untold Story of Russia and the World. And it's for August 18th, Sunday night, August 18th, here in the Land of Enchantment time zone, Mountain Time. Then scroll down and you'll see my news items under Radio with Pictures. First item. I mean, this is a really, 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 really bizarre story. A few days ago, I think Thursday of last week, there was a nuclear accident in Russia. And the Russians did not own up to this for several days. They started out by minimizing it, calling it some kind of an accident with a fuel-powered cruise missile. They said that only two people had died. Then there was a photo that appeared on the web, which unfortunately I don't have, but it was so spectacular because it was taken on a hill overlooking a nearby northern Russian town. This occurred up by the White Sea at the very northern coasts of Russia, kind of like just below the pole. And it's 250 miles north of Moscow, I believe. Anyway, there was this really interesting shot. It's like whoever took this shot was very, very smart and very, very quick, because it had a man and a woman and a young child standing on a hilltop, which was green, because it's summer there, like it is here, of course, Northern Hemisphere, overlooking this small town. And then on the horizon, there's this startling, shocking, amazing mushroom cloud looking kind of like those 50 shots of our nuclear tests in Nevada. And also, like some of those shots in modern, movie magic where the CGI shot shows you the classic mushroom cloud, but it's really fuel oil. And if you put enough of an explosive mixture in the atmosphere, it doesn't have to be nuclear. You'll get, because of the geometry of winds and updrafts and convection and all that, you'll get a mushroom cloud. So you can simulate a nuclear test on a much smaller scale with just a lot of fuel oil and oxygen and, regular combustion. Whoever took this shot, perfectly timed, because this apparently was the actual shot of the test, the so-called cruise missile test, which had gone terribly wrong. It was only a few days later, I think maybe 2 days later, that the Russian, because of the radiation spike that occurred in that town where the photographer had photographed this couple with their, I think, young daughter standing on this hill looking over this amazing phenomenon, that the Russians admitted that there had been a radiation spike lasting several hours in that town. Now, you don't get radiation from a fuel combustion accident with a cruise missile. You just don't. Unless someone was stupid enough to, of course, put a warhead, a nuclear warhead, on a missile they were testing in a test, hold down stand, which no engineers in their right mind would ever. I mean, there's no reason to do that. There's no way that. So ultimately, it came out that this test was not of a conventionally powered cruise missile, but something that we, meaning the United States and our Atomic Energy Commission and the Defense Department and the Air Force, had looked at decades ago, back in the 1950s, something called Project Pluto, named for death. I mean, you can't get plainer than that in terms of symbology. And our guys looked at this technology and said, no way. Because this is what it entailed. It entails putting a small nuclear reactor, miniaturizable, and I really wish that Stanton Friedman was still alive and with us, because he worked on an allied program in that time frame, which was putting a nuclear reactor in a big, big, big bomber and using the energy to basically boil water or maybe sodium metal and having that go through a heat exchanger, which would run a turbine that would create, through rotation and a generator, electricity. And the electricity would have powered the props of the airplane. That's not what this technology that recently, 3 or 4 days ago in the Soviet Union went bang, really is. It involved putting a nuclear reactor in a cruise missile so that the airflow ducted past the reactor, this superheated several megawatt reactor, would superheat the air, which would then be forced out the back end like a jet, an air-heated, nuclear-heated jet, using the air as the working fluid, as the fuel, as the mass, the reaction mass, to throw out the back engine, while you're scooping in cold air in the front and heating it by flowing it past or through the reactor. Well, the problem with this is to keep the reactor light enough to be lifted into the air and into space ultimately by means of this heating process, nuclear heating process, you basically don't have any shielding. So you've got a naked nuclear reactor sitting in the middle, actually toward the back of this cruise missile, sucking in cold air, ejecting it out the back as superheated air, causing a jet thrust, which could power it, I mean, the half-life of the uranium 235 that would be at the heart of this reactor would be, years. So this thing, provided the materials didn't melt, or even more important, catch fire, because in some of our tests in the 50s, the whole damn thing just caught fire, burned up, literally consumed itself through ordinary combustion, because it stripped away oxygen and you had flammable materials. Materials technology back then was very primitive compared to now. Anyway, the whole point, as I'm reading the story, is the Russians grudgingly kept giving ground over the last several days on increasingly weirder and more and darker aspects of this story. Like originally, there were only two technicians, engineers who were killed. Now that rose to seven. And originally, the spike of the radiation in the town was only, twice background and then went back to normal. Later stories, amplified by people like Greenpeace, who apparently, because this is a Russian test center, somehow got the cooperation of the Russians to actually outfit the town with radiation sensors that Greenpeace has access to through the internet, of course. They're not physically there. And they and then the Russians' stories matched that for a few hours, the radiation levels went up 16 times background, not just two. And then they went back to quasi-normal. Well, the next part of the weird story is that there was apparently, several days later, the plan to bring an entire train, a specifically outfitted train from somewhere to the south, maybe around Moscow, to bring them north to this little town whose name begins with an N. I don't remember the name. Let me click on the story and see if I can give it to you here on the air, which is located, like 20 miles away. Okay, we don't want to do that. Let me do this. Here we are. Okay, the town is reading. It doesn't say in the story the town. Anyway, it begins with an N. You can probably Google it easier than I can find it. The point is that they were going to bring this train up from maybe Moscow or slightly farther north, and they were going to evacuate all the inhabitants of the town. I mean, if there was nothing to worry about and the radiation gone back down to normal, why would they have to evacuate the residents? Anyway, in more conflicting stories, a few hours later, the district governor, in which this town lies politically under his control, flatly denied there had been ever any plans to evacuate the town inhabitants because the evacuation, A, was canceled, and B, the Russians began denying there was ever a plan. I mean, this was one terrible cascade after another terrible cascade after another terrible test cascade, but that's not where the weirdness stops. Now, this is everything that I've just told you. You can read in that story from the Defense Journal, which we link to, or you can read it in the New York Times or the Washington Post or Yahoo or, any of your mainstream sources, where things get really more intriguing for us here on the other side of midnight. Is this is a story that shouldn't exist at all. I'm trying to book probably the world's foremost expert on the secret space program, the real secret space program that I and, physicists like Paul LaViolette and others over decades have documented really exist. A program based not on rockets, not on ramjets, not on nuclear technology, but on real control of gravity, control of the hyperdimensional torsion field, which has been ongoing both here and in the old Soviet Union since the 1950s. And I will commend you again to Paul LaViolette's book on anti-gravity. I don't happen to have the exact title on the tip of my tongue right at the moment. Again, Google is your friend. Google anti-gravity and Paul LaViolette, and you will instantly come up with that book. It's an insatiable book. It is so well documented. It has so much real, solid information going back to T. Townsend Brown and, some of the secret Navy experiments in control of gravity, et cetera, up to and including leaks on actual working programs under the DOD. So if you've got working anti-gravity, and we know that the Russians have been ahead of us, both theoretically and experimentation, because there was a much more, shall we say, favorable political climate, military climate for development of these technologies on the other side of the Iron Curtain than on this side publicly for decades. Why in the world, in the 21st century, in 2019, would Vladimir Putin be experimenting and promoting, as he did in his speech last year in 2018, where Florida was the target of a diving hypersonic nuclear-powered ramjet cruise missile? I mean, it makes zero sense. And the guy I'm trying to get on to talk about this extraordinary contrast between the secret technologies we know are being used by, you know, the deep state military guys on both sides, and probably even China, if not a few other nations. You know, talk to Tom Bearden about little nations like Israel and their, you know, technological prowess in these areas. Why in anybody's right mind would you be publicly testing to where you kill seven very bright and very dedicated Russian nuclear engineers with a technology that once you start using it, I mean, because there's no shielding, this damn thing is, it flies around for days and days and days, keeping the opponents off canter because they don't know where it is. It's not following a ballistic trajectory. It can go, like the old joke about the 800-pound gorilla, anywhere it wants to, and it can do it indefinitely as long as the materials in the engine survive. They don't melt or catch fire, and new materials are much more, you know, resistant to this than the 1950s stuff they were working with. Why anybody in their right mind would use this kind of clunky, primitive, stupid, absurd technology? Because basically it leaves a stream of death in its wake anywhere it flies. And you would have to launch it from your homeland, meaning the Russians would have to launch it from Russia because they don't have any real overseas bases. So everything has to go from Russia. We have ringed the old Soviet Union with all kinds of bases, meaning we, the West, you know, the so-called free world, the Americans. They haven't had the same luxury. The only other base they had briefly was, you know, Cuba, and we all know what happened there. Almost plunged us into World War III. Why would Putin be developing and boasting about this archaic, stupid, ridiculous, non-essential technology in a secret space program world of real control of gravity? I mean, you have an anti-gravity device. You can hover indefinitely in terms of stealth, in terms of fueling. You never have to land. You can either park it in orbit and bring it down when you want it, or you simply sail it around silently, effortlessly, as a kind of a, you know, back door doomsday weapon. If you do this, we'll hit you. In other words, none of this makes any sense unless, and this was something that I'm going to talk about with my guest when we finally get him, because I had a very long conversation with this guy who works for a major aerospace company, and they brought him in and literally told him he could not talk about this on this show. Which, of course, goes back to how I opened the program. If we're so nuts and so crazy and so far out there, why do they care? Well, if that wasn't enough on the other side of midnight to kick off the evening, where we're going to be talking at great length about Russia and Russian history and the old Soviet Union and what's really going on, and the distortion of worldviews as to who we are and how we really got here. I mean, this is not a trivial show tonight with my guest, Thomas Williams. Here's another data point. In the same time frame that we've got the Russians acting really stupid about nuclear, Putin in particular, we've got Elon Musk talking about nuking Mars. I mean, what? Are they all eating the same weird breakfast cereal? I mean, Elon Musk talking about nuking Mars would be, you know, like me talking about nuking the moon. Why the heck is he doing it? I mean, ostensibly, he's been talking about terraforming Mars And there's been some press back and forth that with current technology, you really can't do that. Well, current technology includes nuclear weapons. The idea that he's proposing, in fact, he's even touting a stupid T-shirt to kind of get the idea out there. I mean, dumb. If for no other reason, it makes him look like a lunatic. And Elon Musk is not a lunatic. Remember when I was on with George on Coast one evening, we were talking about his Musk amazing idea for returning boosters, and George flatly told me, oh, it'll never happen. Dumb, George, very dumb, because only a few months later, it began to happen, and it's happened now routinely. So many times he's landed those first stage boosters in that spectacular pirouette coming back from the edge of space, landing in a synchronized ballet at the Cape on those two pads, particularly with the Falcon Heavy, that it's become a grown routine. And he's got all kinds of other technological wonders up his sleeves. Why is he mucking around with the idea, which politically is a non-starter, ecologically is a non-starter, technologically is a non-starter, and is not necessary as a non-starter, of using nuclear weapons to warm up, to melt the polar CO2, to flood the Martian atmosphere with greenhouse gases so that it traps solar energy, raises the temperature, melts water, releases that, and begins basically a cascade that results in ultimately an inhabitable Mars. I mean, none of that is necessary, a la the nuclear route. The way you do it, well, I don't want to spend a lot of time explaining how there's so much better ways of doing this, which completely begs the question, should one do this? Does any private corporation, does any government have the ethical and legal right to totally destroy the current Martian environment before we can get there and find out, paraphrasing a certain president, what the hell is going on? I mean, if there was an ancient biosphere, if there is a contemporary slumbering, sleeping, somnambulistic biosphere, if the methane ejections we're seeing from Curiosity and other missions now is from living microorganisms underground, or equally possible, actually more so in my model, their releases from ancient arcologies, rooms collapsing due to oxidation and the basic collapse of an ecosphere in those sealed compartments, releasing the methane of bacterial, life forms gone rampant into the ambient Martian atmosphere where they're rapidly dissipated. If any of this is true, the way you'd really muck that up so you could never reconstruct the paper trail would be using nuclear weapons on Mars, no matter how you pretty them up and call them things like nuclear thermal warming devices. I mean, what the heck is Musk up to? Or is he being clever like a fox and he's pointing the mainstream to the idea of nuclear, Mars, nuclear? Ancient Martian nuclear? Brandenburg, ancient Martian nuclear war? Is he trying to do an Emily Dickinson on us? Like, tell all the truth, but tell it slant? Anyway, we're not going to solve that one tonight either, but I just think what's interesting that you have, a major Russian screw-up with nuclear, and then you got Musk in the same time frame going, oh, let's nuke Mars. Okay, some positive news. The Indian unmanned mission Chandrayaan 2 is headed for a touchdown near the South Pole of the Moon in a couple, 3 weeks, the night of September 7th, which it turns out is a Saturday. So we're getting the team together and we're going to have some knock your socks off new data vis-a-vis my model that there's ancient artifacts all over the moon, including this moon-encompassing, extraordinarily sophisticated, incredibly high-tech Type 2 ancient glass dome that once existed, of which we now can see in all the data we've looked at, from Earth, from missions, from various governments, this ancient presence of this moon-encompassing ancient glass dome. So be there or be square. Finally, in weird news, and this will segue gently into my guest this morning, Trump wants to buy Greenland. You heard me correct. According to the Wall Street Journal, and now according to the president himself on the tarmac there in Morristown, New Jersey, which I find so weird that he's making all these pronouncements from Morristown. I was born in Morristown. I have an affinity for Morristown. So he stands there, and the press asked him this afternoon as he's heading back to the White House after his two-week vacation, is the Wall Street Journal serious? Is the Washington Post story serious? Are you interested in buying Greenland? And he says, yeah. He says, well, it's not kind of on the front burner, but, you know, we've talked about it. And I'm going to talk to Denmark, because Denmark, of course, technically owns Greenland. And there's all kinds of – I mean, for one thing, I'm trying to remain neutral about this president. I don't know whether some of you have noticed, but I have not been on the bandwagon to say that everything he said is nuts or crazy or racist or whatever. And frankly, I think, given the persistence of this story, that the mainstream should dig a little deeper into why does the president of the United States want to buy Greenland? And why has this persisted for many, 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 many months now as a story, as a real story? I think there is something deeper there, something we should kind of pay attention to. I'll give you one example, okay? Hold on to your seats. Many years ago, there was a theory, and I'm trying to remember who coined it. Habsburg, that was his name. Hapgood, Charles Hapgood, who wrote a book, Earth Shifting Poles or something like that. And he said in the book, with a foreword actually by Albert Einstein, who kind of backed him up, that past terrestrial catastrophes, remember our discussions last night with Jordan Maxwell about Genesis and the huge time gap between Genesis 1, the Elohim creating the heavens and the earth, and then Genesis 2, the earth became waste, not was without form and void, but became waste, like in a huge catastrophe. Well, one of the models for that catastrophe would be a polar shift, which would pretty much lay waste to the entire world because the oceans would slosh. Sorry, I have to take a drink of water there. I've got some tickling in my throat. That's live radio for you. Anyway, one of the things that Hapgood was able to do was to chart, by means of ancient maps, I forget the admiral, the Portuguese admiral, and the fact that there were maps of the Antarctic showing it ice-free, was able to chart a kind of an approximate path of the pole. What would happen if the Earth had tipped in ages past? And there was another group with the Rand Corporation who in the 1950s, backed up by some Defense Department data from the Air Force and their polar reconnaissance in old they weren't old then, B-29s of the poles, and magnetic surveys and ice surveys and all that, they were concerned with a future flip of the Earth, a future tilt, which would have all kinds of weird things that would happen. We reached the bottom of the hour, and I probably should go to a break. And when we come back, I'll finish this thought, and then we will segue to Russia. Because believe it or not, the two are connected. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. You can stop, breaking at me, Keith. I see you. We shall return.
Мамашка моя, погоди, не знала, а я дочь. The Other Side of Midnight.com. Tune in to listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. Listen to past episodes anytime on any device. Search the archives of over 180 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcast that provides you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. The Other Side of Midnight.com.
And welcome back, everyone, to The Other Side of Midnight for this Sunday night, August 18th. My guest is waiting in the wings, and this whole thing has been leading up to a very important context. And remember, this show, if nothing else, is about context. Because the last president to basically advocate buying a major piece of real estate was a guy who wanted to buy Alaska from the Russians. And the actual guy that wanted to buy it, his name's Seward. You think he was Secretary of State. Anyway, that ultimately went through. The United States ultimately bought Alaska. And it was called for a long time Seward's Folly, because nobody back in that time, decades and decades and decades ago, could imagine that Alaska, which was a land of snow and ice and Eskimos, and that was basically it. I mean, Alaska is a treasure trove of riches, from oil to minerals to gold to rare metals to ancient cultures to extraordinary pristine landscapes to, I mean, Alaska turned out to be an extraordinary boon to the cultural and economic life of the United States. And I've been a little bit disappointed at how down on Trump's idea of buying Alaska, of buying Greenland, has been treated by the mainstream, because it's like they have no vision. Remember what Lincoln said, you know, where there is no vision, the people perish? Well, just because it's an idea coming from Trump, everybody seems to think that it's kind of crazy. Well, take a second look. Because not only under all that ice, which is melting very, very, very rapidly because of global warming, I mean, there are huge glaciers that are disappearing at phenomenal breakneck speed. There are some very unusual things about Greenland under all that ice that one could consider. There are minerals. There is a treasure trove of natural resources. There is breathtaking landscape to be seen. The whole idea of tourism. There is, among other things, a very strategic reason for wanting to be in possession of Greenland, because we do have the farthest northern U.S. base in the world, in Greenland, at a place called Thule. Camp Century, which is buried under the ice, supplied with power by nuclear energy, a little reactor, actually, is up there ticking along and providing heating, cooling, and lighting, and all this. And so when I begin to hear people in the White House confirming off the record, before the president confirmed on the record this afternoon, that he's kind of looking at Greenland, my, you know, shall we say, skeptical bump goes, could there be a really interesting reason why this administration would want to buy Greenland? And we're not going to answer that tonight, because it's kind of sitting there. But the last time a major piece of real estate on Earth was acquired in negotiation with another power. It was with Russia. And that place, which turned out to be incredibly valuable, was Seward's folly. So let's not think of this tonight as Trump's folly. Let's think of it as Trump's mystery. Why does he want to buy Greenland? Segwaying. The reason this is important is because my guest tonight, Thomas Williams, is going to talk to us about a whole bunch of stuff about Russia and the world that we may not have, you may not have heard of. In fact, a lot of it I had not heard of, and I did a lot of digging into one of the prime guys we're going to talk about. So let me, without further ado, introduce my guest, Thomas Williams. He was born in Liverpool, found out at an early age that life is not exactly as we've been told. I mean, where have we heard that before? Quoting him directly, "The world seemed upside down to me. My opinions were different to most others. I had a healthy interest in UFOs, having witnessed and experienced events as a young child and from adulthood onwards. This," Thomas says, "led me into the internet in the mid-1990s, searching for knowledge on UFOs, which led me down the rabbit hole into many, many, many other fields of, shall we say, secreted or twisted or different knowledge. In 2002, Thomas goes on, "I moved to Florida and have been in America ever since. The turning point for why I'm involved as I am now was attending a conference in Irvine, California, called Awake and Aware back in 2011. You know, that was a conference that I attended and actually spoke. In fact, he goes on, he said, "The conference included Richard, who I spoke to at the bar briefly, and the show ended rather lively, as Richard will attest." Yes, I can. Anyway, he says, "I came away thinking I have to do something with all my learned knowledge and my hard-won experiences. This led me to taking part in social media for the first time. I joined a group called Universal Voice, which morphed into Cosmic Voice, and subsequently my own show, Truth, Honor, and Integrity, since May of 2016. Our show," this is Thomas speaking, "covers many topics from ancient history, banking, extra and non-terrestrial life, psychology, shadow and inner work, how to avoid being targeted or even psychically attacked, and much, much more." So on that note, Thomas Williams, welcome to the other side.
Hi, Richard, and thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to it, and I hope I can get some stuff across to people that some of which they may have heard, and a lot of it they may not have. You know, and it's important people have an open mind. You have to, in this field, you have to have an open mind, because everything we've been taught is basically a lie. And I think a lot of people, particularly over the last decade, have found that out.
Well, last night when Jordan made the same statement, I would actually differ with both of you, and I'll tell you why. Because when you tell an outright lie, there's no resonance with your audience. In order for a lie to work, there has to be truth entwined therein. So it's always a percentage. That's why I look at Trump very differently than a lot of folks in the mainstream, because when he looked into the camera like a year or two ago and he said, "Everything you see and hear in the mainstream should not be believed, it's all fake news," yeah, I took that to be a much deeper resonance with the idea that an awful lot of stuff in the mainstream is not real, but some of it is if you follow the ant tracks back to the nest, to the sources, to the origins of these stories. So I would be very resistant to the blanket idea that everything we think we know is wrong. I would be very open, because I've discovered it myself in so many areas, that a lot of what we're told is twisted. It's back to my, you know, metaphor again and again and again with Emily Dickinson. Tell all the truth, but tell it slant. So it's only out there for those who really want to know.
Yes. Yes, I said that with my own show. My show's not for everyone. It's for people who want to learn in a different way. in my opinion, the alt media's kind of lost its shine and has done for the last 3 or 4 years. It just seems to be repeating the same narrative from previous years, like ET disclosure. My opinion is we've already had it. You know, there's lots of people who've had their own experiences, and only they know that's their truth.
But isn't that a kind of a kind of our fault? You know, shame on us, shame on, you know, everybody.
Yeah.
Because we're expecting it to be given to us, like we're expecting, you know, when Eisenhower sat there in the end of his term and made this major speech about the military-industrial complex. We're expecting the announcement will come from the president, from the Oval Office, as opposed to looking around and just doing it for ourselves. Our whole society, both East, West, wherever, is so authoritarianly driven that even if we have our own truth, we radically, you know, suspect it's somehow not right because it wasn't sanctioned by the world.
Yeah. You know, the truth is inside of you. You know, waiting for Trump or Putin to announce anything. You know, or what makes them the authority on proof or truth?
Well, for one thing, they have – hang on. For one thing, they have access to a whole body of knowledge that we don't. I mean, under both presidents, there are huge intelligence agencies whose sole purpose is to gather information on every person on the planet and feed it to the guy that runs the show. So they start out with a knowledge base we don't have. The question is, will they reveal some of it or any of it to us? And if they won't and they don't, how are they using it for themselves?
Yeah. Well, the problem is what most people don't know is Trump doesn't have the need to know on that level. He's at level 23 security.
Okay, you need to back up and tell people what you're talking about. He is the president of the United States. Constitutionally, the president is the chief executive officer. He legally, as far as we know, is the guy in charge. You're saying something different.
No, he's not in charge.
No, I said legally, according to what we know.
No,
so
legally,
tell me why I'm wrong.
Legally, we haven't had a proper government in America since 1871. What we've had is a corporation. And corporation, like every other corporation, has security levels. Now, we had the issue in 54 with Eisenhower meeting with the tall grays. We had the issue of Kennedy knowing about the ETs in 63, and after that it got shut down. And so because presidents only last 4 to 8 years, they become a liability to the control system. And Trump, or any other president for that matter, is at level 23. And you've got cosmic clearance of 49. All those clearances Trump cannot access. This is what Kennedy tried to do with Brezhnev on November the 12th, 1963. He tried to, he actually signed an agreement.
Wait, you don't mean Brezhnev, you mean Khrushchev.
I think it may have been.
No, Khrushchev. Khrushchev lasted one more year in power after Kennedy was killed on November 22nd, 1963.
Yeah. Well, 10, 11 days before that happened, they signed a deal to lower the security clearance in both countries.
Well, according to Khrushchev's son, who is a tenured professor at Brown University, following on the work that I've been doing, that date, about 10 days before Kennedy was killed, Khrushchev also agreed to become part of the Apollo program and go to the moon with the United States, Soviet Union, United States, sharing spacecraft, sharing data, sharing cosmonauts, astronauts.
Yes.
And that's a huge reason why Kennedy was killed, and then a year later, Khrushchev put under house arrest.
Yes. Well, you know, essentially what they were doing was lowering, Kennedy didn't like the security framework, and he kept going on about the agencies, in particular the CIA.
He wanted to break it into a million pieces. He said that in the public speech.
There was an issue between the Kennedy family and the Bush family, and it's gone on for several decades. So,
Stop. Let's back up to when you're in Liverpool, because I want to get back to when did Thomas Williams figure out the world is full of lies?
At seven, I've seen things in the sky that I didn't think were possible.
Was this in Liverpool?
Yes.
Okay. What did you see?
Pretty strange craft going at extraordinary speeds that I've not seen conventionally since. You know, you're talking there 50 years ago. Well, just over 50 years ago.
I have another question. How at seven did you know that anything in the sky was not supposed to be there? What was your frame of reference?
I had knowledge that I didn't know where it came from a young age.
Start there then.
Religion didn't fit. I knew it didn't fit. My belief that we came from the stars, I had no idea where it came from, because none of my family or friends at that age even discussed aliens, as we called it then. ETs came in after the movie in 77, 78. And so it became an inner issue, because you couldn't, I couldn't formulate questions or ask people about those subjects. And then I got into senior school, and I thought, well, it'll be better, you know. I'm
now, what's the equivalent in high school or grammar school here of senior school?
Yeah, well, in the UK, it's called junior school from age 6 through 11, and then from 11 till 16, it's called high school.
Okay.
And so I got into high school. I was very gifted in all the basics. You know, I had a reading age of 14 at 7, maths of 16 at 7, and spelling of 14 at 7 also.
What did your dad do?
My dad was he worked on the ships. He was a ship's painter.
You mean nautical ships?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, my God. I love the Queen Elizabeth II. I borrowed her one day.
Yeah. I've worked myself on HMS Edinburgh. I did ship painting for a little bit, about a year. But Liverpool was, you know, was the major port in the world at one stage.
Mm.
You know, and it was major for shipbuilding. You know, that's where everyone came to New York generally via Liverpool. You know, and so it was a high-end employment district because of what went on in the docks, you know, the trade and the shipbuilding, and on it went. But yeah, it's so.
Did your mom work, or did you stay at home?
A mixture of both. Mom worked in a what you would say in America, a cookie factory. We would call it biscuits over there. And she would do her own sewing. Mother was very gifted. She installed her own central heating in 1973. You know, my dad was never keen on working in the house. So mother would thick carpets and paint and all kinds of.
Wow.
That's kind of where.
So did you grow up with a lot of books in the house?
No books. That's one thing. Right through my life, I've struggled to read books. I just can't read books. I'll read the internet for hours on end. You know, that was, you know, we'll get into that later. But from 1996, I was literally on the internet 5 to 7 hours per day, studying all the UFO sites and the so-called conspiracy sites and learning about different subjects. You know, that fascinated me. So that's where I got a lot of my knowledge. I didn't realize I had as much until I went to that Awaken Aware in 2011. That changed everything to me. I felt.
So you're there in Liverpool. You're growing up in an ordinary English household. Your dad's working. Your mom works. And you don't really. You're not surrounded by books. But you said you knew things. Did folks come to visit you? Did you have apparitions, visitations? Or did stuff appear in your mind? Because If it's seven, you're wondering about what's in the sky. That's pretty, you know, early to be wondering.
Yeah, I don't remember much before five, but I remember at six, seven, and eight, I used to wake up in the middle of the night and stared out the window, waiting for something to arrive. And, you know, like I said, at a young age then, with no internet and no book references and no family members who were anything interested in that field, I had to go inwards, because if I started speaking about those things, particularly when I got to high school, nobody else was interested, you know. And you get called all kinds of names because you've got a different belief system. And we've all had that. We've all gone through that.
Tell me about it. Yes, yes. Oh.
You know, you know, I remember when I got into high school, the first 2 years we had what was called religious education, and that really didn't fit in with what I knew.
Oh, wait. In a secular high school, they were teaching religion in high school?
Yes.
Interesting.
Age 11, what we call year one and year two of the high school.
Was it comparative? Like, was it just the Anglican Church, or was it Muslims and Hindus?
No, it was all the Anglican.
So it was
Protestants.
Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'd lasted one and a half lessons. I got barred because I asked. I made statements.
Oh, like what? Tell us.
Well, the teacher was telling us we were made by God. So I asked, who was God? And he thought I was being funny. I said, no, I'm asking you, who is God? And so I said, and where's the proof? I said, so he said, well, what's your opinion on it? I said, I believe we were made by aliens. We came from the stars. And of course, the teacher laughed and tried to make fun of me with the rest of the class. And then that lesson developed, and then he started talking about talking snakes and bushes going on fire by themselves and talking to you. And I said, since when have you ever seen a tree go on fire and talk to you? I said, if you go down to your doctor and tell him that, you're going to get locked up. Shut up, Williams, shut up, Williams. That was a common theme with the teachers. But I was asking valid questions. And it appears in this world, you cannot ask common sense questions.
Can, but you really, really, really have to be determined, because there's this overwhelming inertia. You know, it's not so much to me as a conspiracy, is people just resist anything that doesn't come from authority.
Yeah.
You're not taught to think for yourself. You're taught to follow the herd.
Yeah. Well, that's something I always did. I thought for myself, and that got me into trouble because.
Were you ever suspended?
Remarkably, given some of the antics that I did in school, no.
Oh, see, I got you beat. I was suspended for asking questions.
It still baffles me to this day, because, you know, at some point, I had several physical fights with teachers and yet never got suspended.
Really?
There was a targeting going on. That didn't become apparent until in the 20s. But when I look back and teachers were lying to get me into trouble, I got into enough trouble as it was. You know, I was no angel, you know. But when you got bundles of teachers telling lies to get me into more trouble, you then realize something's amiss here. Something's not right, you know.
God, it sounds almost like a conspiracy.
Yes, it does.
So why were you targeted? You know, you're not from the peerage, you're not from royalty, you're just a kid in school in England, middle class kid. Why were you? Why did they lie about you? What? Why were they afraid of your questions?
I think the, life in England, you know, is all about authority. You're the small child, so you listen and shut up. You know, that's the way society is in the UK. They talk at their children, not to them. And so I was challenging authority, which they deem as being cheeky or belligerent.
I like that term, cheeky, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I then developed where I had quite a number of people that would follow me as I was popular amongst the class.
Oh.
Why? Because...
So you were a leader. Oh, that explains some of the targeting. Wow.
So... If a teacher I thought was picking on one of my peers, I would stand up, even though I was the smallest in every class I was in. I would stand up and defend because, you know, everyone has the right to speak. And this authoritarian rule and control system never sat well for me from a very young age. And I didn't get on too well with the parents. They were control freaks. And then it went into the school, and they were control freaks, and it just didn't sit well with me.
Mm.
You know, what got me thrown out of religious education, they were talking about Adam and Eve, and we all came from Adam and Eve. So I turned around and says, what you're saying then is we're all a product of incest.
Oh, God. How to win friends and influence people.
That got me thrown off. So, you know, it suited me.
So that was the tipping point.
That was the tipping point for that particular lesson. So I had to sit out in the corridor for the next
Do you know
years.
It's so weird? We have a congressman in Iowa just the other day that basically said, we're all the product of rape and incest. Are you with congressman?
Yeah, well, they would know better.
How times have changed. Hey, hold it there. We're at the top of the hour. God, this time is going by really, really fast. I want to lay this foundation because, to me, it's so important how people get to figure out that things are not exactly as represented. My guest this morning is Thomas Williams. We're talking about revolutions of the mind, revolutions of paradigms. We're going to get to the old Russian stories very soon after the break.
TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com. Tune in and listen to Richard C. Hoagland and his fascinating guests. Join Club 19.5 to get access to exclusive member benefits. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350 episodes. Membership costs $9.95 a month, 33 cents a day. Support the broadcast that provides you with the most interesting conversation available. Talk radio at the cutting edge of science and thought. TheOtherSideOfMidnight.com.